I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London, despite Chelsea at Brentford.
Yeah.
Jules, what a show. We had a couple stinkers, but we had so many action-packed, event-packed games. Valencia, Real Madrid.
Crazy
that insane Napoli-Juve game last night. But we got to start with the Manchester derby. Come on, you knew this
was coming,
right?
Of course.
All right, I want to go out. We've been critical of Ten Hag and whatever. One thing which is not fair for anybody to do is to say he's unwilling to try different things in search for a solution. Because when I saw that lineup and the way they set up with essentially without a center forward, with Rashford or Garnacho cutting from wide areas, I was like, at least you're doing something different. You're trying to throw them a curveball.
Yeah.
And they took the lead, and admittedly, it was a worldie and 0.000.
Yeah, you can try 99 times, you will never score again.
Okay, but for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah,
it worked. For Ten Hag?
Listen, if you're asking me if I'm a fan of the 4-6-0, I'm not. This was a 4-6-0. I am not. I will tell you again that Huddersfield had more shot when it came to the Etihad than United, or as many. Sheffield United had more shot. Young Boys had more possession than United when they went to the Etihad.
And when he says Young Boys, he doesn't mean the team from Bern who play in the Champions League. He just means a bunch of young boys that they found outside Old Trafford.
So there was some... the setup was all really could do because of all the injuries that they had and everything. They still played quite negatively. I know there were times where a better pass or a better touch would have put them in a decent... But there was not that pass and there was not that touch. So in the end, three shots, 24% of the ball. I'm sorry, 0.25 expected goals. This is not enough for me. Other teams have gone to the Etihad this season who are worse than United, even with all those injuries, and play better and had more chances and scored more goals. And from Crystal Palace to all the other teams that I mentioned. So... yeah, it was not bad and it worked for a time. But in the end, they could have lost 6-1 easily because Haaland could have scored two, Foden could have scored another two. So,
So if Foden scores another two and Haaland scores another two, it's actually 7-1.
You see what I mean? Yeah. Like, I understand the setup. That's all he could do. But don't give me this was a great, strong performance from them. He said we had a good game, he said. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I bring some notes. I don't have them about like, the stupid things he says after games.
And always.
I don't understand. Why would you just come out, just take it on the chin, say, hey, we had a bunch of guys out.
Yeah.
We're in this situation now. We played in midweek. They're a lot better than we are. They've got better players. They have more money. They have fit players. They have a better manager. Just come out and own it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I know.
We tried this game plan. We got maybe a bit of luck. And that's it. And, you know, he got himself a yellow card.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well, yeah.
Right. And then he was also unhappy. There was a penalty incident as well. And I'm like, dude, anybody really watched the game? Don't bring up this nonsense.
I mean, the walker on Rashford, for him to get yellow for that is ridiculous because that's obviously never a foul. The penalty, Ederson gets the ball first. It's a tough challenge. It's a tough tackle. I just don't think because he takes the ball first that you can give anything else than nothing, really, than the throw-in.
Well, it's not reckless, right? And in England especially, if you get to the ball first, unless you endanger an opponent, which he didn't do.
No, it's a side tackle, so
right?
It's not from behind.
So it's silly to even, I think, to even bring those things up.
But I can understand the frustration because for so long, I think they thought they were going to get points.
But I almost feel like, so the idea is you get a point, so then it builds a bit of faith, and you still know that there's an abyss. And part of me turns us around and says, look, City are a lot better, and you knew that ahead of time. I'm not saying this was a scheduled defeat because it's a derby. You never want it to be a scheduled defeat. But at least you were in the game because City missed chances.
Yeah.
But to me, the other big takeaway is City are just unflappable. Right, a goal down, Haaland misses chances, Foden misses chances. He can change a thing. I don't even know when his first.
Yeah, Doku came off.
It was like at the hour 50, mark, right?
Yeah, just before the hour mark.
But there's just such a confidence in this City side. And when they're like this, It's really, really difficult to deal with.
Yeah, and also against a team that will defend for 90 minutes. You can't defend for 90 minutes in the Premier League against nobody, not even less City away at the Etihad. And you're going to make mistakes because you lose energy, you lose you just the awareness and everything. And that's exactly what happened.
All right, Jose, let's continue with this mental exercise of Ten Hag, because we mentioned it in passing. I'm not going to list all the injuries, but you know it's a billion.
Yeah, yeah.
When I see Johnny Evans out there, I think to myself, really? But then I also think to myself, obviously, there's no Lisandro. There's even no Maguire.
Yeah, sure. There's
no Luke Shaw. Luke Shaw played left back, played center back.
He would have played that in that game, yeah.
Well, there's Varane, who he didn't like. Remember the whole period when Varane was on the naughty step? the fullbacks, I know Lindelof, I don't understand. You know Phil Foden has a dominant foot, right?
Yeah.
Very obviously. Three times, one of them the goal, three times in that game, Foden does the same move where he steps as if he's going to go to the byline. It's almost like, I just show him to the byline.
I know.
And deal with it. If you can't beat him one-on-one, right?
I know.
And then every time he goes inside, and Lindelof turns with like the speed of like a super tanker.
Yeah.
These are little things, but and I appreciate you're not a fullback and whatever, but come on.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's not even doing...
That's not Ten Hag's fault.
No, it's not. And it's not even doing the homework like you should do before every game. Okay, who am I going to face? Why? His qualities, blah, blah. Because surely if you're Lindelof and you've been in this country long enough, you know what Phil Foden is about and you know that he plays on your side. So this is what he's going to do. So unless he thought Mainu or Casemiro will always come in and help him out, on the inside, which is very possible. So you're there in case he comes onto his right foot, you're there. And if he comes inside onto his left,
somebody's going to come pick up.
One of the two sixes has to come, which is fair enough, which is normal. But still, like you said, you can show him on the outside and let him go towards the byline instead of coming inside onto his left foot. So I don't know. I don't understand that. I don't understand the Amrabat mistake. The guy just come on. I mean,
that's not Ten Hag's.
No. So the limitations of this team, it's not just on Ten Hag. I was just saying that for me to plan to defend for 90 minutes is impossible. You just cannot do that at this level, and especially even less when you go away at the Etihad against City. Right. Because in the end, you get battered. So you would have got, had you tried to play, you probably would have got battered again, but at least you would have tried to play it. And we go back to other teams who have gone to the Etihad and have exploited some of the defensive fragilities, let's call it that way, of City, like we saw on the first goal. Put more pressure on the defense instead of playing that 4-6-0 or even sometimes 6-4-0 for most of the game.
But you go back to the same point, right? Options. Because I've been saying it forever since the start of the season. Hoyland, you're going to season Hoyland and Martial. You know, you're going to be short.
For sure.
He'd played Rashford through the middle in the previous games. Rashford was not good.
No.
He started Rashford wide in this game. Rashford scored a great goal. A couple times he got free, but also I thought was generally impalpable. Objectively, if I were Ten Hag and say, Jules, since you're so clever, what am I supposed to do? I have this guy who's rubbish when he plays through the middle, so I have to play him wide. Garnacho is not a forward. I got to play him wide on the other side.
No, I understand.
I don't have a center forward but my best player happens to be a guy who plays number 10. So I don't even have, in Bruno, I don't even have the option of saying, oh, Bruno, you play center forward because he can't do that, right? And because then I completely take him out of the game and I lose his passing. What should I do? Should I have played McTominay at center forward? I mean, actually thinking about this, right?
For example, I don't know. I mean, I understand. Like, that's what the limitation. Right? No, but realistically,
it's horrendously put. And if you, by the way, if you play Rashford and Garnacho, right? And even if there's some other dude at center forward, Omari Forson, I haven't seen enough of him to know if his real position is center forward or it's wide or whatever, right? Even if I play this dude at center forward, right? And then I'm obviously going to play Bruno.
Yeah,
I'm going to get completely overrun because the other two guys, Casemiro and Mano, can't control City's midfield on their own. So I don't want to say it's lose-lose-lose, but it's just such a badly constructed team. I'm not going to be a Ten Hag defender, right?
No, it is. I mean, I would have never played McTominay in a game like this. I would rather Ahmad to play on the right, for example. I would have played Rashford in the center and just play him on the shoulder of
But he doesn't Diaz. Want to do that, and he's
okay,
not good at that.
I know, but in that space. And I think the fact, okay, Bruno as a number, as a false nine, is not a bad idea, as we saw on the goal, although we're going to discuss the goal and debrief the goal that United score. But the problem by having Bruno so high, in a way, up the pitch, is that he's also your best passer. So you almost need it. You almost need it like deeper to be able to ping those balls in behind of the high line of City for Garnacho, for Rashford, for Ahmad, for whoever, Anthony, whoever you want to play there. So I know it was always going to be difficult tactically. I'm just not keen on teams ready to defend for 90 minutes. That's it.
I wonder, I mean, if I was to ask you who is City's second best passer of the guys who started, you probably said Kobbie Mainoo, right?
Yeah, which, maybe Casemiro.
Yeah, you know, which I think says a lot, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I wonder, I was surprised Diallo didn't come on. I think Amad Diallo's, you know, I want to see what he can do.
He's better than Fosun, so I don't understand why Fosun, probably better than Anthony as well.
I did wonder a little bit if the issue, if you wanted, I mean, but then it's going in a different direction, right? And you're second guessing, but if you need another passer on the pitch, could there have been a scenario where you find room for Eriksen?
Yeah, maybe. But if the idea is to play...
Or maybe even at 1-0, maybe that's when you have Eriksen, where you try to keep the ball a little bit, force some tactical fouls or something, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, if the idea was to try to exploit the high line, which they didn't really do much, then I think another passer would have been clever. And then you would have made your forwards, whoever they are, run and run in behind and try again. It doesn't matter if you're offside 7 times. One time is going
to
work out.
Well, you say that. And to be fair to Ten Hag, and you talk about exploiting the high line. There's the three incidents, right? The one where Garnacho's free. And again, neither of us think it was a penalty, but Garnacho gets there a split second earlier.
Yeah,
he's around Ederson, and you got a chance on goal.
Yeah.
The walker on Rashford... My issue with Rashford is, okay, I know everybody goes on about how fast Walker is and blah, blah, blah. But come on, Rashford, you've got a head start on him. You're 26 years old. I expect you to either draw the foul, legitimate foul, whatever, or to be able to get in front of them.
But when he goes down, he can still get to the ball. That's why I'm struggling to understand, because if the ball was too far and he's trying to get the foul, fair enough. But when he goes down, the ball has gone to his side, not Walker's side. So there's Walker, Rashford, and then the ball. So he can still get to the ball instead of going down.
That's a problem. Look, obviously he's had a really difficult season.
No, I understand
I think his image isn't helped by part of what's happened, that Players Tribune thing. Like, I understand what you're trying to do, but I think it's completely tone deaf in this context.
Yeah.
I don't think he's getting the best advice media-wise. And it's missing from United. It's missing because he's one of United's leaders, you know. He's the local kid. Let's talk about City a little bit, because again, I thought they were very, very good. The misses aside. All right, you wanna get the Haaland miss out of the way? Ha ha ha, look, you know.
The thing I would say, the ball is quite high.
Yeah, but come on.
The ball is
quite high. He's 8 feet tall.
It doesn't matter. The ball is quite high.
Yeah, you know what? There's something called gravity. If the ball's high, it's gonna come back down.
But then if he waits a bit more, the defender comes in and clears it. So that the only thing I would say to
He's like a cyborg. The defender comes, you
don't go there with his feet then. He should have gone with his head or with his chest or with his
That's what I would say. Looking back, he probably might have gone.
It's quite high. But yeah, he should have scored.
Whatever. You expect him to score, right? Okay. You get out of the way. The guy scores chances. He misses chances. That's fine. Yeah, in the end, the chances he scores are so many, and the positions he gets in are so many. I know you have an issue for with it. You were nitpicking. We've nitpicked all season about the defense, and you're pretty obvious. You're up against Bruno. You can't let the ball for the Rashford goal. You can't let the ball bounce.
Yeah, and I mean the goal that. Considered at Brentford when they still won, when Foden scored the hat-trick. I think it's the worst goal they've conceded this season by far. It's a goal kick from Flecken. And Tony blocks, I think it's Ake. And then the ball goes all the way and Mope goes one-on-one and scores. This one is slightly different, although the idea is the same. It's a long ball from Onana. that you should, I mean, I think when you start playing football, whether you're 5, 6, 7 years old, whatever, it doesn't matter. They teach you that you cannot let the ball bounce. So if someone kicks the ball long, whether it's a goal kick, a goalkeeper clearance, a free, anything, you just don't let it bounce because then you're in trouble. And I cannot understand how Diaz let that ball bounce. And then Bruno does really, really well holding up the ball and waiting for Rashford to run. And the Rashford shot is magnificent. But the ball should never be allowed to bounce on that. And it's, again, Diaz at his level, City as a team should never allow that.
And even then, especially because it's Bruno who's super skillful, but he's a little fella.
Yeah.
In the physical battle shouldn't be an issue.
I just think it's a bit of naivety maybe. And I think they take it too easy at times. So they think, yeah, we'll be fine. And I think this one and the Brentford goal are two dreadful mistakes.
They did end up with a stupid XG. I think Guardiola's aware of the defensive things that come up.
Yeah.
Given Liverpool have been running on fumes with all the injuries and the chaos, and then we'll get to their game later. Do you have City as favourites, despite the fact that they're point back?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's next weekend, favourite on field, for the rest of the season. Even if their goal difference is not as good, obviously, as we mentioned, then the other two, for now, they're still a long way to go, but for now...
I think for me to change my opinion, I need to see Liverpool have to continue winning until the injured guys come back. And I think, obviously, we saw Szoboszlai, who, as you know, I'm a huge Szobo guy. He came off the bench in that game. Curtis Jones is on his way back, who I think they really missed him. Obviously, Mohamed Salah will be back before or after the international break. Some dispute with Egypt, but whatever. That'll get resolved. If they can not drop points until the injured guy, just hang in there until the cavalry comes.
Yeah.
Then we may have a battle on our hands. Otherwise, it's just looking.
But then we kept thinking that Liverpool would draw points and they still haven't.
And they haven't. It's the little Klopp stardust.
But when you see Foden in that kind of form, in the best season of his career, I think Rodri is still unbeaten in 59 games in all competitions, which is an incredible record in Premier League era. It's just, you wonder how and who will stop City really this season.
Maybe Klopp. All right, Jules, enough MCR. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Vinicius Jr. and Real Madrid returned to the Mestalla to face Valencia, and I was hoping for two things: no racist abuse and no refereeing controversy. Instead, I got both. Jules, let's start with Vinicius and a story broken by our colleague Gustavo Hoffman of what was witnessed in the stands.
Yeah, you saw again. I mean, I think you could even hear a little bit on television, and then you saw videos, I mean, even of young children.
There's a child on his mother's lap.
I don't know how old he is.
Who's shouting, monkey, monkey.
It's terrible. I mean, I don't understand. Like, after everything that happened in that stadium with that club and Vini, and I know he scored two goals, so that would have obviously won them up. I understand that. Yeah. It's still no reaction that you should have when a player scored against you. They shouldn't have ever. But again, we're going to go back, Gabby, before you give your opinion. Maybe that last year, the sanctions were not strong enough because clearly a year on, they still do the same stuff.
Look, I go back to this. We've had this in Italy. We've had it elsewhere. You have to sanction the individuals. I mean, you can sanction the club, sure. But to get change, you need to sanction the individuals because that is what you need to do. Now you have video. That woman with the child in her lap, right? And by the way, the person who Gustavo Hoffman spoke to and you know, he got the video from, you know, those people surrounded her. They tried to take her phone away and stuff like that. We can't have this.
I know.
And
it's terrible.
Look, my understanding from people who were there is there wasn't audible racial abuse from the crowd.
Yeah, from the majority of the crowd. Yeah.
Right? So these are just individuals. That is still completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
And if you're Valencia now, what you do is, I'm sorry, you guys don't represent us, right? Mm. I'm kicking you guys out.
Yeah.
I'm identifying you and I'm kicking you guys out. And that is how you move forward. I have no problem with the crowd abusing Vinicius with the raised fist and because they don't like him, because he scores against them. That's fine. But you cannot cross that line.
I like his celebration on the second one, really. I thought that was very, very powerful and strong. And Gabriel Madrid would have got the 3 points if the referee, Jesus Gil Manzano, had not blown for full time as they crossed for Jude Bellingham's header and goal came in. What did you make of it?
So Carlo Ancelotti called this unprecedented. It's not.
I saw him in the Arsenal women's game halftime yesterday.
What, Ancelotti?
No, similar. They were Arsenal were about to shoot on the edge of the box and the referee blew the whistle.
Well, if you're an old timer, and Carlo Ancelotti would have been, I think, 18 years old in 1978, you might even remember this because I think it was Brazil against Sweden. In the World Cup, Clive Thomas, referee, blows his whistle as Brazil take a corner kick. Zico scores. Had that goal been allowed to stand, Brazil would have been in the 1978 World Cup final. Simple as, right? Yeah. So this is not unprecedented.
No.
A lot matters. There's no rule that says he has to wait for the end of the phase or whatever. There is kind of like a common sense guy.
Because how many phases do you wait? Because if Bellingham's header is saved by the keeper and the ball comes back and Real Madrid are still attacking and are about to cross, do you let play again? Right. And then how many times?
Injury time is 7 minutes. We were like at the 8 minute 48 mark, something like that. He had, and Real Madrid do not dispute this, he told the players, I mean, this game is ending after the corner kick.
Yeah.
Kick comes in, Mamar just really punches it out. Mm. Diaz gets the ball, goes into a wide position, and he blows his whistle just before Diaz crosses the ball.
Yeah,
bad decision on his part, maybe, but you can't talk offense.
Why is it a bad decision?
Well, I would have liked to see the play continue.
Yeah, but for how long? Again, how many phases?
That's fine. I mean, but you cannot get this wound up. You can't have scuffles on the pitch. Bellingham apparently said, he got sent off afterward. He didn't insult the ref. It was just foul language. He said it's an effing goal, which is okay. It doesn't warrant, to me, it doesn't warrant a red card. So hopefully he won't be suspended for that. But we need to grow up a little bit about this, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And Sidlo made a good point just to finish on the FC show on Saturday night when we were doing it. He said in Spain, on the big screens, they don't add the added time. So 90 minutes, and you know they do 45 for first half and 40, which is weird in the first place. But then they don't add the added time. So for example, you don't know how many more minutes you've played after the 90 minute because it doesn't show on the screen. So maybe the reaction also from players would have seen, hang on, we were already 2 minutes over the 7 minutes that were announced. And I know the referee can play for longer, but at least maybe that would help a little bit in those situations.
He had told the players, I don't have an issue with that. As for the game itself, Jules, was a draw a fair result?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Valencia started really well, benefiting from Real Madrid's bad mistakes. And I mean, the Carvajal back pass, for example, is terrible. And then Valencia trying to defend. I thought they played really well. I like what Baraja is doing with this young team. It was always, Real Madrid were always going to come back because they are so good. It was never a doubt. But I thought, it was fair probably.
Yeah, and great cross from Brahim, by the way, for the Vinicius goal.
Yeah, very good. Bayer Leverkusen with Weah Cologne, and the gap is now 10 points in the Bundesliga ahead of Bayern Munich with 10 games to go. 10 in 10, that's your rule.
That is my rule. Yeah, well, once it gets past 10
Yeah, 10, sorry, okay.
So, it gets a lot easier when the fact that Cologne aren't good. On top of that, they have a guy sent off after 14 minutes for the stupidest thing as well. Like, if he was trying to stand on Xhaka or whatever it was. And it's it. Alex Grimaldo, by the way, 9 goals this season in the Bundesliga. How many times do we see that?
Frimpong and Grimaldo, the two wing-backs. Incredible. They are. It's remarkable.
We not done. More quick hits.
Yes.
And more officiating controversy. A late Darwin Nunez goal in the 9th minute of injury time gives Liverpool a 1-0 win away to Nottingham Forest. That keeps them 1 point ahead of City. But Jules, Forest, not happy.
Not happy. And I think they've got, obviously, a point because there was an incident where Konate got like a kind of concussion a little bit.
Potentially.
So the referee Portini had to stop the game, but Forrest had the ball. Callum Solada had the ball on the left-hand side. And instead of giving the ball back to the Nottingham Forest players, which he should have done, he gave it straight back to Kelleher, who then could clear this line. And
so the rules on this, and I had to double-check them, is if there's a drop ball in the penalty area, you give it to, if the ball was last touched in the penalty area, you give it to the goalkeeper regardless.
Yeah.
If it's outside the penalty area, which it was because Callum Hudson-Odoi had, you give it to that player in that position.
Yeah, which didn't happen. Then there's still 2 minutes for Forest to defend better. They get the ball back at some point. They should have cleared instead of trying to dribble out of their own box, which Hudson-Odoi and I don't know who else. Elanga maybe, I think, tried to do. And that's where McAllister gets the ball, cross it for Darwin to score. But if they clear the ball on the Trent River behind the stadium, it finishes 0-0.
Yeah.
And they don't concede that goal and nobody talks about Paul Tierney's mistake. So I understand their frustration, but it's also created by Forrest for just not managing that last action well enough.
They're kind of two separate things. Nobody's suggesting that the drop ball necessarily, we don't know how it would have influenced a goal, and it was several minutes later and you said they had lots of chances.
Yeah.
I find it completely worrying that this is a Premier League referee. This is a referee who's been getting bigger and bigger games this year. This makes a technical error like this.
I know, that's terrible.
This is like the Diaz disallowed goal in the Spurs game.
Yeah.
You have to know the rules. That is the minimum bar.
Yeah.
And I thought that was shocking. And by the way, he got no help from the fourth official or the assistant. None of those people saying like, hey, Paul, what are you doing?
Forest were so unhappy that assistant manager Stephen Reid was sent off after full-time. Owner Evangelos Marinakis chased the referee down the tunnel, and former referee Mark Lattenberg, who is now a consultant for Forest, said he tried unsuccessfully to speak to the match official after the game and get into his dressing room and was denied entrance.
All right, so a couple of things here. First of all, Stephen Reid will probably face a suspension. Marinakis, much as I love him for reasons of physical proximity and last name proximity, both our last names start with an M, you can't do that.
You should never be on the pitch.
Well, whatever. It's your
pitch, right? No, you shouldn't.
Your pitch, your stadium, your team, you own
We make
people.
Fun of John Textor for doing it in Brazil. It's the same.
I know,
it's
but
Marinakis
is Greek. Come on, it's I got not. A soft spot
he,
for him.
He should get whatever. Suspended as well.
He probably will, actually. But Klattenberg.
I'm
sorry. First of all, if you want to have a word with your best. Mate privately, first of all, after the game, you can't change anything. Second of all, if you want to talk to Paul Tierney because, you know, of the old alumni fraternity of referees, find a way to talk to him. But don't tell us that you're talking to him. Don't tell us, oh, I tried to go into the referee. You know that's wrong. Did you like it when people came and banged on the door of the dressing room when you were a referee? I don't understand why he would do this. I don't understand why he would even tell us.
Yeah, and why did he think he was okay? He's not there to lobby. He's there to advise Nottingham Forest with what referees, you know, the files that they can call. This is what he does. He went to speak to the media.
Yeah.
He had like a press huddle with him to talk. I mean, come on. What kind of world do we live in now?
Yeah, I'm happy for him that he has a new career. And I think there is a role for former referees. But it's not this. It has to be defined.
Yeah.
Atleti Bilbao and Barcelona play out a scoreless draw at San Mamés. Jules, it wasn't much of a game. The real story, the injuries to Pedri and Frenkie de Jong.
Yeah, quite early on in the game as well, both in the first half. I mean, I think Pedri was the most heartbreaking one because he's literally in tears. And you know it's another muscular injury and you know this been happening too much. And the poor, really, I felt for him, the poor kid watching that game, because I felt like I can completely understand what you must go through in your head. It's crazy. Frankie, Xavi said for both of them, it doesn't look good for Frankie as well. But Frankie hasn't been injured like Pedri has, really. And when you think that Gavi is also injured, he's basically Barcelona's midfielder is out now.
It means more Christensen in midfield.
Yeah, and could be out for a long time. So it's a real, real shame.
Shout out to Bilbao, by the way. They just played on Thursday night, 7 changes.
And yeah, and they had players missing as well.
Right. And they had, Nico Williams out and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, no, Nico. Huge win for Napoli, hence the shirt, of course, and our new best friend, Ciccio Calzona, against Juventus on Sunday night. Gabby, you'd said that Napoli wouldn't be playing in the Champions League next season unless they won that game. Do you still feel that way now, even more?
I actually said unless they won the Champions League.
Oh, won the Champions League, sorry. Because now they're getting closer. I mean,
they're getting closer.
Race.
Italy will possibly have 5 places next season, looking likely. So yeah, why not? This is a great game. The irony on this, and I think this is more about Juve than about Napoli. Napoli got the winner because stupid foul at the end. You can't do that on Victor Osimhen, missed the penalty. But Captain Jack is there to lift it in the top
great
corner.
Finish.
But Juve played really, really well. They had so many chances, especially in the first half. Federico Chiesa showed up in the second half, scored a great goal. It's this weird irony that there's this weird sort of cluster mess of Juve that when they play well, they lose. And so many times they played badly and they get lucky and win. I hope this doesn't mess with Allegri's head, because this was a really good performance and something that you want to build on if you're Juve. If you're Napoli, man, maybe this guy is the answer.
Yeah.
Chelsea get an away draw at Brentford, but there's more unhappiness, Jules, as Pochettino gets booed. Todd Boehly gets called something that rhymes with runt. Do you get why the fans are so unhappy? Pochettino came out afterwards like, oh, I know the fans don't like me. Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the 11th in the table. Again, the lack of consistency was so obvious in the game. Where
the back three, you didn't like that brilliant
sudden innovation?
No, but
the first half was good. I think this suits Chilwell and Gusto.
You don't change to a back three in you've never played before.
No, I know, but maybe he wanted to mirror what Brentford was doing. I don't know. I mean,
mirror this. Come on, man.
No. But I mean, I didn't say I like it or not. I just said that suits Chilwell and Gusto, too. But that first half was decent, and after that, they just collapsed completely. Almost if they were not ready or expecting what Brentford would do in the second half, which was always going to be much better than what they did in the first half because they were so bad in the first half.
Also, Nico Jackson, stop shushing the crowd. Right, those are the people who pay your salary. Do not, do
especially
that.
After missing that big chance at 0-0 before the header. But I think it would be a very long end of the season for Chelsea. That's for sure. Tottenham come from behind against Crystal Palace late in the game to win 3-1 as Timo Werner scores his first goal in this second Premier League stint. The first one for Spurs. You impressed?
With Timo Werner? Well, I'm impressed.
It was not
Spurs
good for 70
coming
minutes.
Back.
Yeah.
But no, but he's not good. Like, the guy's not going to finish, but he keeps working and working and working.
That's what we said when he signs.
You have to learn to love him for that. Just don't expect him to finish. You have other guys, hopefully, who can finish in this team. Well, other guy, Heung-Min Son. Well, no, Emre Charleston.
Great Romero goal as well.
But it was good. You got a goal down on a free kick and they just keep going.
Yeah.
Now, this was way back on Friday, but let's talk about Paris Saint-Germain's scoreless draw against Monaco. And how much Kylian Mbappe enjoyed coming off at halftime.
Well, first of all, it was a great 0-0, one of the best of the season. It was really good. Secondly, all the talk is obviously about Mbappe being subbed off at halftime. Mm-hmm. By Luis Enrique not for injury, not for a decision because to make the team better, he said. And then Kylian to get changed during the break and then not sitting on the bench with the rest of the team, but walk all around at the Stade Louis II to go and sit in the stands with his mum and his entourage, three rows over above Nasser Al-Khelaifi and all the PSG hierarchy. I thought it was just an incredible image. Luis Enrique flexing his muscles. I mean, come on. I'm not sure.
You can call it incredible. At a normal club with grown-ups in charge, you do this, you get fined.
Oh, yeah. It's not acceptable.
It's disrespectful to your teammates. He should know better.
He was the captain as well on Friday night.
And by the way,
he wore the armband on the
pitch. By the way, you try pulling that crap at Real Madrid. You just go and do that. You know, already they don't like you. Already they're thinking.
That's not true.
Already they're thinking what you did before. You have to win us over, right? These stories get reported. It's just not smart behavior.
He wanted to make a point, I think. But I don't know where you go. There was an explanation on Saturday morning between him and Luis Enrique. We will have to see, but it's not looking good, I think. Atletico Madrid beat Betis as Alvaro Morata scores to end a 9-game drought. Gab, it wasn't so straightforward.
No, it wasn't straightforward at all. So Morata, Lino gets a penalty. Morata takes it. It gets saved. He had 4 rebound attempts to put it in. Didn't do it. I'm a Morata guy, as you know. Thankfully, he scored. They won 2-1 at the end. Oblak, absolute worldy save.
Memphis was good
this season.
Well. Yeah.
But by the way, just to give you a sense of Atleti, he takes off both strikers at the end and replaces them with center backs. We're back to Cholo 1.0. Also on Friday, Bayern were held to a 2-2 draw by Freiburg, and Tuchel was criticized by none other than Lothar Matthäus for rounding on his players once again.
Yeah, I mean, we know the relationship between Matthäus and Tuchel, of course, and all the incidents before. I thought it was such an average performance from Bayern Munich, I won't lie. I was so disappointed. I mean, yeah, it's a great goal by Tell, it's a great goal by Musiala. They're both individual great strikes and talents, and this is how they score. But overall, Neuer made some incredible saves again. It was just not good. And the more I watch them, the more we go back to this point. Why is he still there? It's never going to work this season. So why are you keeping him in place? What for? Why is he for?
I can only imagine they're looking forward. They just said, like, all right, the players have kind of checked out and said, all right, let's do this in the Champions League. You know, Tuchel's already won a Champions League by hook or by crook. And so they were thinking ahead to the Lazio game.
Don't know. They can't. I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I just think it's such a terrible position to be in anyway, overall.
You know, it's funny. I was looking online on one of the Bayern fan websites. Somebody asked the question,
how many Bayern players would get into Manchester City starting 11? I'm going to ask you the same question.
Yeah, for the one that started at Freiburg?
Yeah, just in general. Bayern players.
Musiala?
Ahead of Foden?
No, probably. I mean, ahead of Doku. Doku or, you know, someone like that. Yeah.
They argued Neuer, which I'm not really having.
Maybe.
And Kane, you need to disassemble your side, right? But you're only playing one striker. You're not going to play Kane ahead of Haaland.
Definitely not. And sticking to Friday as well, Gabby, it was a wild ending to the Lazio-Milan game. Noah Okafor off the bench 2 minutes from time scored. And then three red cards for Lazio, who finished with eight players.
Yeah, look, there's two elements of this. I don't think Milan played particularly well, but they kind of kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And Okafor scored some big goals off the bench of them, so they can all celebrate that. The big talking point were those red cards at the end. The villain to Lazio fans was one Christian Pulisic.
Yeah.
He got abuse online, which, again, some people in the US are like, oh, look at this, those awful Lazio fans. It's not like they're abusing him racially or making, I mean, they're just, they're obviously going to be angry with him because he played a part, and certainly played a big part in getting Matteo Guendouzi sent off, which...
And Pellegrini before that, too.
And before that, Pellegrini. Yeah. Now, both Guendouzi and Pellegrini were stupid.
To react, yeah, for sure.
But first of all, Pellegrini... So, Pellegrini's whole contention, and this really gets to me, right?
Yeah.
There's a Lazio player down, right? The ball's near the sideline. And Pellegrini's like signaling to Pulisic, okay, and to the referee, stop, stop, there's somebody down. Pulisic just takes the ball and goes, and Pellegrini chucks him to the ground.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're not the referee, right? And it's not your job to tell the referee to stop the game.
Just put the ball out.
Just put the ball out of play.
Because that meant Milan would have the ball kind of, but they would give it back to Lazio anyway.
Guendouzi, even dumber. Okay, Pulisic is holding you back. Pulisic should have been booked.
Yeah, but you're still attacking to try to come by. There's a minute left.
You're a professional footballer.
I know.
Come on, man. Like, seriously. But of course, Claudio Lotito, who's wonderful, the Lazio president, when it comes to calming things down, he now says he's mulling legal action and talking to his lawyers. Whatever. Aston Villa make life difficult for themselves against Ludogorets before your boy Luca Dean bags the late three-pointer.
Yeah, I mean, they were cruising. Two goals from Watkins, who'd been so, so good this season. And then in the second half, they let Luton come back into the game twice to draw 2-2. And then it looked like they were going to drop points. And then Luca Dean, of all people as well, to score that winner in the 90th minute.
Luca Dean, who's, you know, the
4'3".
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever. Who had an argument with Unai Emery the weekend before on the bench. This time he's the hero. It's good. They keep that momentum going for fourth place.
I'll say this about Luton. I don't. When people talk about kind of blood and thunder and guts and belief and motivation, this is a team that has really, really poor individual players. But those guys, or players who certainly are regarded that way, right?
Yeah.
If I ask you who's their most technical player, you would probably say Barkley followed by Townsend, right?
Yeah,
but, which is scary, right? Townsend, who didn't play, even play football for 6 months.
Yeah.
And yet, first of all, they show that they're technically better than some people thought they were. And secondly, there is something to this motivation, to this collective, to this never say die.
Sure. For sure.
They're well set up on the pitch and they just never go away.
Yeah.
They're like those nasty rashes. No, well done. I'm kind of rooting for them to stay up. I didn't think I'd say this, but I am kind of rooting for them to stay up a little bit.
I'm not.
Okay.
Just saying. Girona stumble at Mallorca, losing 1-0. Gab, it's 1-5 for them. I think 3 defeats in the last 4. Has the bubble burst?
1-5 is a definition of a burst bubble. Yeah. Now, this is a Mallorca team, of course, that played in midweek. They couldn't handle the corner kicks, the set pieces. Girona just could have got all turned around. They still had chances at the end. Savio, I think, could have equalized.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's mentally draining and they're falling away. Falling away to where? They're still second in La Liga.
Exactly.
I still think they can finish second in La Liga.
They can finish
that's
top four.
Fine. Yeah. Let's not expect them to go and win every game. Yeah. Just because Real Madrid dropped points, it's a big failure because he didn't win. Big away win for Stuttgart at Wolfsburg. As Sergio Girassi bags 2 goals, taking him up to 20 in the Bundesliga this season. Jules, Sebastian Hoeneß is further burnishing his CV.
Very much so, Gabi. And also for that, a top four finish, but now they're 4 points behind Bayern in second. So that is getting closer. Incredible. And they are very open. We've said that. They're a good team to watch if you fancy watching them. They're very entertaining. And that game was pretty crazy as well. But they get the win and they don't buckle under the pressure, I think, of, you know, Dortmund winning behind and Leipzig winning behind as well. They're there, very much there in the race. It's really impressive.
I love the fact that four of the big five leagues have what I would consider, to varying degrees, underdog teams.
Yeah.
Who are headed to the Champions League. Obviously, Girona,
yeah.
Stuttgart, Bologna, Brest. And Brest.
Yeah, exactly. And Villa, to some extent. Villa, a big club in England, but they are not a top six club like the others.
No, they're not. I would just argue the other clubs were probably bottom half.
But you wouldn't have said Villa would be top four at this end of the season, either at the start of the season. So. Borussia Dortmund, talking about them, win away to Union Berlin as Karim Adeyemi scores his first goal in 10 months, and what a goal that was as well. Gab, you impressed with their chase of the top four? I mean, finally, they got to be consistent.
No, because it's not consistent. They weren't good. They had like 70% possession. They do nothing with it. Their goals are the result of individual. Adeyemi's been MIA, right? I know he's had injuries. He comes back. He plays. He doesn't play. It's almost like poor Edin Terzic is at his wit's end, and he's just chucking stuff at the wall. But Adeyemi comes, scores a worldie. Dude, where have you been? Honestly, where have you been?
He's been injured.
No, but he's also been back, and he's been rubbish when he's been back.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second goal, by the way, the insurance goal, it's my boy Ian Mattson winning the ball at the halfway line, going on a solo run. Gee, do you think there might have been space for him on this Chelsea?
I'm sure.
Well, whatever. Newcastle beat up Wolves 3-0, Jules. One defeat in the last eight for Eddie Howe. Could they make a late charge back into Europe? Maybe some of the injured guys coming back?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I was super disappointed by Wolves, I have to say, because of the momentum they had. We said that they won.
Shot their load in midweek. Well. Come on, man. Like against Brighton in the FA Cup, right?
Yeah, but I know. But still, I thought it was disappointing. Good performance from Newcastle, the kind of ones that we haven't seen enough this season. I just don't know how consistency that, because even in those last eight, you said just one defeat, but it hasn't been perfect by far. So I think they will always be there, because one thing about them, they never give up again. But I just don't know how high they can go. There's a lot of teams above them, to be fair. Roma do it again, winning 4-1 away at Monza. Six wins and just one defeat against Inter. We mentioned that in the last show. In nine since taking over from Jose Mourinho for Daniele De Rossi, Gab.
Yeah, and look, and he's funny because when you point this out, you have like Mourinho holic saying like, oh, look, it's just like when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took over. Ha, 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 how'd that work out? Look, I'm not saying De Rossi is going to get the job on a permanent basis. Yeah. I'm not saying this means Mourinho was bad. If you want to pedal the line, Mourinho laid the foundations, whatever foundations. What I'm really impressed with is it shows how a team, leave the results aside, just can play completely different football.
Yeah.
How you can come in mid-season and turn a switch and say, okay, we're going to go, you know, from a team that's going to be about solid defending and whatever else to a team that's, we're just going to attack you constantly. Mm. De Rossi is very much of that school. He's regenerated Pellegrini.
Dybala was
out of this world in this game. And they play such incredible. They've scored a goal in every single game in this run. And they're genuinely fun to watch. The Friedkins look like absolute geniuses here.
Oh, I love them.
Leipzig go a goal down, but then beat up Bochum 4-1 to stay a point behind Dortmund in fifth. And your boy, Xavi Simons, shining again.
Yeah, shining again. Not much more time for him to be at Leipzig. So I think the fans should enjoy that while it lasts. He was great. I think Opanda was
mean.
Good. Well, he's leaving. He's coming back to Paris at the end of the season. So it's 4 months to go and then that's it.
And 4 months when Asensio and Dembele started ahead of him. Like he's going
to
go back.
No. But it was great. They were good. I mean, Bochum are a terrible team. We've said that many times before. So you keep the pressure. And also, to your point about in the big five leagues, that surprise package somewhere in the top four, there's also a big races for the top four finish. In England, it would be great. In Spain, we mentioned it would be great with Athletic Club de Bilbao. In Italy as well, there's a lot of teams that can finish fourth and fifth behind Milan, Juve and Inter. And same in Germany as well. So Leipzig, Dortmund, Stuttgart, and even behind that, be very, very interesting.
Sound like Arsene Wenger in the race for the top
four. No, but it's true.
No.
If you don't have a title race, then at least you have a race for something
else. We don't have a title race, by the way, anywhere other than the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. Only in the Premier League.
Just on Xavi Simons, I was making fun, but where does he fit into the Luis Enrique imaginarium? Because obviously Colomwani you can't get rid of. Gonzalo Ramos, I'm assuming, is going to stick around, right?
Yeah.
You put big money in Asensio and Dembele and Speedy Barcola.
I guess it's between him and Barcola for that left-hand side position. Oh, you play him in midfield. A bit like what Lee is doing this season sometimes. I would love to see him in a free role in midfield.
With Warren really and Vitinha.
Because the one thing about Marco Rosa and Leipzig and Simons this season, as great as he's been, a lot of the time he's still been on the left side as a left winger. Yeah. And that has been the position in a very kind of positional way team. If you give him a bit of freedom, I wonder how well he could do in like a number 10 creative role. I think he has enough energy to defend too and help a midfield three. I don't know, it'd be interesting, but I think it would be, so seeing how good he is this season, I think it would be hard to loan him again next year and not try to play him this, you know, for this PSG team. Yeah, Bologna have got to be one of the stories of the season. You mentioned them amongst all the stories in Europe this year. Their road win over Atalanta when they were one goal down as well means that they strengthened their grip on top four. Are we really going to see them in the Champions League next season?
Well, it looks this way, especially with the the fifth place. I mean, they have a 4-point gap over fifth. They have a 5-point gap over sixth. And this is a team with a shoestring budget. Again, Thiago Motta's done a phenomenal job. Yeah. I think their scouting's been really good too. They've regenerated Joshua Zirkzee. You know, and they've taken a guy like Lewis Ferguson from Aberdeen.
Yeah.
My colleague Fabio Caressa, speaking on Sky Italia, said, oh, he is probably the best player since the end of the Dalglish era.
Ooh, Borges Dalglish,
Souness, and so on. I think we're getting a little bit carried away here, even among attacking midfielders. Like, you know, there have been
a few.
You mentioned McFadden.
Yeah.
It was Barry Ferguson, who's his uncle, I believe.
Yeah.
Are there others who...
Craig Burley, you said?
Craig Burley have something to say about that. Yeah. But yeah, it's high praise. And it's amazing. He only has 10 caps. Or he's 24. He only has 10 caps.
I don't think he starts. I think he's part of the squad, but I don't think he starts.
Doesn't watch much Serie A, does he?
No, exactly.
So much for the blue card, Jules. FIFA President Gianni Infantino speaking at the IFAB meeting in Scotland with his sparkling Swiss wit.
Of course.
He delivered one of those FIFA lines. I remember Giuseppe Blatter always used to say before a big final, he'd always say, let's hope football is the winner today. Yeah. And he said, it's a red card for the blue card.
Hey! Well done, Gianni. I mean, he said
it was never a real proposal.
Yeah, is it true? Do you believe him? I'm not sure. I think they tried and they saw how bad it was received that they decided not to go with it.
It's a stupid idea.
It's a stupid idea.
It's not going to
be
trial. They
have a lot of stupid ideas.
But it's not a FIFA idea, by the way.
No, I know.
They consider the idea from the outside.
Yeah.
And they said, no, there's no point trialing this. And I think they're right. I mean, I don't even think it requires a trial to understand the impact that this would have when players get sim-binned and you know, teams go in lockdown mode. Nobody wants to see that.
Definitely not. Galeno scores twice as Porto destroy Benfica 5-0 in the league, with Sporting winning on Sunday. It means that Benfica are no longer top of the table in Portugal. Is this a Marsh meltdown like the one last season for Roger Schmidt?
I hope not. Because remember last season where we were all so excited, Benfica and were undefeated and so on, and then kind of the wheels
exploded,
came off.
Yeah.
But they lost to Sporting in the semi-final of the cup in midweek.
They should have been knocked out by Toulouse in the Europa League last week as well, by the way. They were terrible in that.
I think they have Rangers next. I wonder if Rangers can do it.
But this
was one-sided. 5-0. Porto really hitting stride. Arsenal beware.
I know.
Arsenal, by the way, we haven't mentioned you guys. We're not ignoring you. We know you're third of the table.
They play Monday night.
You play Monday night in a few hours as we record this. Arteta said that if they win 10 of the final 12 games, they'll be in the hunt for the title. I am sure this is something, this is not like he had his analytics geeks come up with this. I'm sure he's asked them the question. He said, let me just chuck this out there. Sounds about right. Probably about right, right? They'll be close.
Yeah, probably. Sure. I mean, if they win 12 out of 12, they're going to be champions.
Will they?
Potentially. If there's a draw between Liverpool and... If they win today...
If my aunt had wheels, she'd be...
I know, but you need an if as well.
All right, let's visit Texterland.
Yeah.
Leon, we're fighting on a good run with Stonewise.
Yeah.
But then they get hammered at home by Lens and your boy Joseph Ugurlian.
That's right, Joseph. Who I bumped into on Regent Street the other day. It was lovely to see him.
What's he doing on Regent Street? What,
his shopping? Office is not far. Yeah, he was going to a meeting, walking down. I was walking up. So we had a lovely chat. Lance were much better. I mean, Stonewise and Lyon have done a really good job with the new signing. There was no Lacazette in that game and the replacements were not good enough. But there was always going to be a time where they play a team that is far too good for them, and Lens were far too good for Lyon. So Lyon will still have to try to get the points in against those like smaller teams, but against the big teams, they were never going to be good enough, I think. So even at home, they got destroyed. Well done to Lens. Really good win to bounce back after what we saw in Europe especially. That was really important. So that's good now. It's good. And also they lost the previous weekend. So it was a really good win for Lens. More text up because you can never have enough of the could never have enough of John Textor. He spoke at the FT Business Summit, Sports Summit last week, Gab, and he complained about financial sustainability rules, of course, designed to keep the rich clubs on top, he said. And he suggested that he would welcome a World Super League because you can not stop evolution. So a World Super League, for people, it's not like the Super League. He said, I think, he would want to see Botafogo play against Lyon, for example. So actually, imagine that the whole world play a league.
Yes. I mean,
that sounds great.
I'm just imagining the carbon footprint. Until, like, this is beyond silly. Until you solve the massive resource inequality, I'm assuming Botafogo's entire wage bill, right? Yeah. Botafogo have done well in Brazil. I'm pretty sure their entire wage bill is maybe, what, one-fifth, one-tenth?
Yeah, I was going to say.
That of Lyon?
Yeah.
Even less than that of Crystal Palace, the other club that Textor's involved in. Yeah. They're the club, by the way, he's been trying to take over, but
yeah.
Steve Parrish, and I love this Parrish versus Textor. I'm starting to become Team Parrish, which kind of tells you, if you know my history here, it tells you a lot.
Well, yeah.
It's extraordinary. The financial sustainability rules exist, whether you like them or not. And yes, this whole point about, oh, it's a cartel of the top clubs. Yeah, we've been hearing this from your people at Paris Saint-Germain,
yeah,
from City fans, from Newcastle. Yeah, you know what? Most investors want this because it's their only path towards sustainability and profitability. Investors like the ones who have invested with John Textor so that he can provide a return on their investment.
Yeah.
So if we want to get rid of all that and just go and just let anybody spend as much as they want, won't that be fun? Yeah, let's do that. And then let's have, let's have Lyon with Textor and his investors' money up against Newcastle and City and Paris Saint-Germain with no restrictions whatsoever. And let's see who stomps all over who. This is what I don't understand about this man. Yeah. Like, it just makes no sense. Yeah, and look, John, if we're being unfair, like I said, I know you prefer the FT, whatever, right? But you have an open invitation to come on Gab and Jules Meets and explain this vision to us.
Very true.
Top of the table clash in the Eredivisie as PSV Eindhoven and Feyenoord draw 2-2 in the Dutch bald manager derby.
Yeah.
Jules?
This was good, Gab. It was really open as we expected, really. Two really attacking sides. Santi Jimenez scored again for the first time since January 14th. He hadn't scored in almost like 2 months. Really good goal to put his team 2-1 up. And then
6 weeks.
Yeah, but like, you know, and I think Gustil scored the equalizer. Really good. I mean, not so much for the, I mean, there was no title race, even if I failed not won anyway, because PSV have been too good and are too clear at the top. But it was a really good game, I thought, in the Red Bulls. It's a good publicity for them.
For Feyenoord, after getting knocked out of the Europa League, I thought, you know, this was kind of the last roll of the dice if they were going to somehow cut the gap.
Yeah, but it was a long shot.
We've talked about what Bosch has done this season with PSV Eindhoven and how he shocked us all because they've been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though. Did you notice? Do you think it's a Dutch thing that like Bosch and Slot both sound like sound effects? Like from the old Batman TV series? I'm dating myself here.
Villarreal destroyed Granada 5-1. But Gab, you know why I'm asking you about this, right?
Why would you ever ask me about Villarreal this season? It's so I can comment on the only living sword loss in captivity, scoring a hat trick.
Lovely hat trick.
I don't think there's a single Norwegian striker in the world who scored more goals this weekend.
By the way, watching the game, I thought that Traoré on the right wing for Villarreal is pretty good, right? Doing well. It's Bertrand Traoré from Aston Villa. I had missed completely that he'd gone to Villarreal. I was like, whoa, okay.
That was only
his second game because he obviously came in January.
You would almost think, well, and he was at the Cup of Nations,
yeah,
right?
He was AFCON as well.
Jules, we keep praising Roberto De Zerbi, but Brighton were terrible against Fulham, losing 3-0. Are you going to give him a pass for the injuries and inexperience? Or are you going to start holding him to account?
Know. It's happening a lot this season, though. So I can understand that the injuries a bit the same for Ten Hag, the same for Klopp, the same for Eddie Howe. Okay, I understand. I get it.
Not the same for Guardiola. Not the same for Unai Emery.
No. Some have had less. Arsenal. Yeah, some have had less.
Do they just have better doctors or are they just luckier?
I don't know. Maybe a bit of both. I'm not sure. But it's happened a lot, those kind of collapse completely where you don't show up at all for a game. And I don't think this is good. Maybe they were already thinking about Roma on Thursday, which I understand is maybe the biggest game that they've had this season. Maybe. But this is not good. It's not good for your club. It's not a good image that you're sending. I would not be happy if I was De Zerbi, the players, the staff, the fans, the club, anybody. I don't think it's any good.
Did you see him?
He had
this moment.
I don't know. Why is he doing? Because it happens too often this season.
There's a video of him and he's got his like hoodie on and he kind of like pulls his hoodie up over his face and he's like kind of emotes.
Yeah,
like,
you could tell he's angry.
You could tell he's angry. Look, a lot of this is very new. It's very new to a lot of the players. The injuries have really hurt them a lot.
No, for sure.
Maybe he's rotated too much, being involved. You know, they went deep into the FA Cup, of course, before getting knocked out. It was obviously knock-on effect from Wolves. But they better be up for it against Roma.
Massively. Gab, what's the FIFA series and what should anybody cares about?
So, do you know? The
no, FIFA? I saw it when you... So, it doesn't... I mean, reading it doesn't look good to me, but...
So FIFA, and I think, look, we criticize, we mock FIFA, but I think sometimes they do good and useful things and that benefit the game. They decided in the March window, which is a bunch of friendlies. So the way it works is when you have an international window and you don't have a qualifier, you can organize friendly games. Inevitably, what happens, since people still seem to understand that outside of the top 30 or 40 federations in the world.
Yeah.
None of these other people have any money, right? They have no money, no plata, right?
Yeah.
So if they organize a friendly, they organize it with like the country next door to them and, you know, go there by bus and it's crappy and nobody improves.
Right.
So FIFA said, you know what? We're going to help you out. We're going to organize these little tournaments for you in different parts of the world, places that maybe don't get major tournaments a lot of the time. And you're going to get to play against teams from other parts of the world. So, for example, they're having these in Algeria, Azerbaijan, Sri Lanka. They're going to have two of them in Saudi because, hey, it's Saudi, right? So that's slightly different. But you're going to have games like Central African Republic against Papua New Guinea. Now, as a fan, you may not care. I'm going to willing to go out on a limb and suggest that Papua New Guinea have probably never played from anybody outside of Asia and Oceania, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure Central African Republic.
So who's going to pay for them to travel to Sri Lanka?
FIFA.
FIFA, okay.
Yeah, they're going to market this. They're going to pick up the bill. I mean, the Saudis, I want to guess, but ultimately, you know, Brunei against Bermuda. Whatever. It's not like I have a burning need to go watch Equatorial Guinea against Cambodia. And I probably won't watch this game. But for the people locally, it does matter. And this is something, and they're supposed to look after the whole pyramid. And, you know, they have a massive surplus. So if they need to spend some money on helping these people, I got no issue. This is important, too, in the same way that helping the women's game, as they continue to do, helping the smaller countries, this is important, no?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's got a problem with this?
No, I mean, yeah. Yeah, let's see. Besides, once he's in place, I'm not sure. I like all those teams traveling. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it's okay for Messi to travel to Hong Kong and Japan.
No, it's not that. I just don't know.
Look, you know what?
I know you pretty well,
Jules. I am pretty sure that, like, at some point in March, you're going to, because you're sick with football, it's like an addiction with you.
At 4 o'clock
in the morning, you'll be like, oh, Gabs. You're going to text me and be like, oh, you watching? I'm on FIFA Plus watching Equatorial Guinea against Cambodia.
No, probably you're right.
You'll be number six.
I also think that you're... Yeah, no, okay, you've convinced me. I think you've convinced me. You've been pretty convincing.
It's the Messi Suarez show as Inter Miami beat Orlando City 5-0. Two goals each for the old-timers, Jules.
So I don't know enough about Orlando and MLS in general. It looked like I could have played for Orlando in that game. They were so bad. Oh, I mean, there's one of the Messi goals where Jordi Alba literally runs almost the whole pitch. Nobody comes near him and he runs. And this is Jordi Alba at his age. He runs. It was really bad from Orlando. But good win for Inter Miami. Two goals each. One lovely finish by Suarez. Far too easy for them. It looked to me like Orlando are a really bad team. Sorry, Orlando fans, if you're listening and watching. But for Inter Miami, it's a bit of momentum that you're building. And it looked pretty good, to be fair.
I think Orlando City are owned by a Brazilian guy, so I'm sure he must have loved having an Argentine and Uruguayan
running riot against this team.
Fun fact about this game, the original referee who was assigned, he had to be replaced because pictures surfaced of him wearing an Inter Miami jersey.
No way!
Yeah, like, if you're a referee, take it semi-seriously. Come on.
What about the snow in Utah as well, where Hugo Lloris played with LAFC, lost 3-0. I mean, I'd never seen so much snow on a pitch for a very long time.
Yeah, it reminded me of that game in, I think it was the U.S. against Mexico in Colorado in the blizzard. Wild stuff.
Yeah. Eric Dier, I can't believe this is in the quickest. Eric Dier has had his contract extended with Bayern Munich already because he's been that good and he's had such a positive impact on that team. Gab is going to be there until 2025.
Yeah, when you don't know who the new manager is going to be, this makes no sense to me. I'm assuming.
But why would Bayern do it anyway?
Okay, first of all, I'm assuming they would not have done this without Max Eberl saying, yes, good idea, let's do it, right? There's no way.
No.
It does mean that, look, Eric Dier, you know, doesn't make $15 million a year, but he's on a good wage.
Yeah.
It must mean that, you know, you're occupying a salary slot for Eric Dier. It means that next season, your center backs, you can't bring in a new center back unless you sell one of Upamecano, Kim, or De Ligt. It seems strange to me to make a commitment. I don't see what the rush is either because you couldn't wait till the summer when he's busy with other stuff.
I know.
So
unless they know already they're going to lose De Ligt or they're going to lose somebody else.
So then I immediately commit to Eric Dier without knowing who my new manager is?
Well, he's your reserve center back. You've got him. I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe there's something in Harry Kane's contract? I don't know. I don't get it. Jules, Georgina Rodriguez was in Paris where you were born and bred. Did she give us a clue about when Cristiano Ronaldo is going to hang up his boots?
Well, it sounded like that, Gabby. I mean, she obviously took part of the catwalk. Is that what you say in English?
Yes, Paris Fashion Week.
Yeah, in the Fashion Week. She was wearing this dress, like old red dress, and his sign behind and stuff. Like, it was lovely. And she said to the other like models who were there that Cristiano promised one more year, maybe two, and after that, this is it. So I don't know if this is the second year in Saudi that he is, or this is the first year and there's another one next year, and after that, this is the end. But she seemed pretty like, he said that it's almost finished. And then he can retire and we can enjoy our lives kind of thing.
Well, because you can't enjoy your life now?
No, I don't know, but maybe she means she will have him all the time, 24-7. Instead of now he's training, he travels to games. Maybe that's
that guy's not going to stop training once he retires. You know that,
yeah,
right?
But he will train at the house. He won't go away for training.
We'll see.
But she looked like she really wanted him to retire soon, to be fair. More bad news for Quincy Promes, Gab. He was detained at Dubai Airport on his way back to Russia with Spartak Moscow from the winter sunny break, if you want. It's not good.
So for those who haven't followed the chronicles of Quincy, just to remind you, this is a guy who was sentenced to 6 years in prison for stabbing his cousin. He also is facing new charges of smuggling 1,300 kilograms of cocaine.
Yeah.
And he's a professional footballer, presumably a multimillionaire, right?
Yeah, you would
think so. You understand, I got my side hustles here, you know, smuggling cocaine and stabbing cousins, you know.
And we thought he was okay because he was in Russia, so they was never going to go and get him there to bring him back to the Netherlands.
So he was detained in Dubai, but apparently he was detained for the stabbing or the drug smuggling. No, he was detained for something else. You know how hard it is to actually commit a crime in Dubai unless you're speaking out about free speech or anything like that. So I don't know. Stay tuned. I'm sure there'll be another installment soon. Yeah,
definitely.
Jules, this brings us to an end.
Yes.
But we got to come back on Thursday because it's Champions League week. How about that? Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.